Welcome to Continued Success on a special Sunday night episode. The only reason this is an episode of Continued Success and not Hitting Season is because I am at the controls and I don't have access to the music that leads into Hitting Season, so we're just going to call this Continued Success since I do have that music. I am Justin Clue. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin_Clue. With me is Chris Jones and Yahoo Sports' own Liz Rocher. We are without John Stolness tonight because I assume he is out doing bigger and better things, but in general is just not available. No, I'm kidding. He's on the SB Nation MLB coverage of all things All-Star break, the All-Star
draft.
Game,
Home Tonight's
Run Derby,
draft.
And draft is tonight. Yes, he is doing coverage of that. So it is up to us. The prisoners have overtaken the prison. And you know what that means. A podcast. So we're going to launch into what the Phillies were able to accomplish in the first half, how we feel about their last, you know, I've been talking about their last 10 games arbitrarily before the break, and the Phillies kind of did stuff with them. It's been an interesting 10 games, and Liz and Chris and I are going to talk about that. So just a hello to each of my co-hosts. Liz, how are you? How are you feeling after the Phillies concluded their first half?
Greetings. The Phillies are 500 in the first half.
500. It's a very high number.
I know. I mean, listen, it's better than I thought they'd be.
Better than 100.
Yep, it's exactly right.
Honestly, there's so many teams that, and I feel like we've talked about this, the AL East seems like it's closer to what people hoped the NL East would be. And the Yankees are more of the kind of, not necessarily the nightmare scenario, but more of a negative scenario. If you told me that the Yankees were going into the break in a worse spot than the Phillies, I don't know. I
wouldn't believe you.
I wouldn't have believed you. That seems crazy. I mean, but what's funny is that the Yankees aren't really in a worse spot because they're 3 games over .500, but they are 8 games out of the playoff, out of first place. So that's kind of what I mean by the AL East is closer to what we thought the NL East would be. But before we get too far down that road, Chris Jones, how are you holding up?
I'm doing decent, I guess. Like you said, we're 500, right? It's like when you go down by like 6 runs, and then you tie the game up, and it's 6-6, and you say it's a brand new ball game. That's where I'm going with the season. It's a brand new ball game, everybody.
Well, am I nuts or
is it a brand new ball game? I'm sorry.
Yes, it is. Listen, we're going to talk about the last 10. We took 2 out of 3 out of the Padres. Yes, they beat us 11-1 in the third game. I don't care about that.
What's funny is, just real quick, the Padres did outscore the Phillies 16-9 in that series.
And guess what?
But the Phillies won the series. Yeah, that's unarguable. But it's all because of that 11-1 game. Yeah, agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just putting that out there. I didn't get a chance to publicize that this week, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, they won 2 out of 3 from the Padres, which is good. They beat the Cubs 3 out of 4 games, apparently, while the Phillies were feeling very ill. They still won 3 out of 4. Yeah, I don't know. And then we take 2 out of 3 from the Red Sox, who are a very good team.
First place in the AL East.
Despite trading Mookie Betts. Imagine how good they'd be with Mookie Betts. But, so I don't know. We should feel good, but we can't.
So let's just take this moment at the beginning then, because we are a famously down on the Phillies, but I feel like podcast. But I feel like that's part of our appeal is that we are willing to be negative about the Phillies.
Realistic. Let's
realistic.
Call it realistic.
That's the word I was looking for. We are willing to be realistic about the Phillies, and that you know has made us seem pretty negative. But I don't think we've ever come down on the Phillies when they didn't deserve it. So that I'm sitting here saying that these I needlessly. Kind of held up these 10 games before the All-Star break just as like, hey, it's 10 games. The Phillies have been a 500 team. If they can use these 10 games to, you know, crawl back to the surface and look kind of good in them, not that I expected them to, but I just kind of presented that and was just like, if Liz and I talked about what record in these last 10 games before the end of the first half would make you feel good. And we kind of settled on 7-3. Like, I hoped for 8-2. That would be, like, a very definitive statement. But 7-3 is like, all right, you know what? It's not 6-4, which is barely anything. It's not any of the other things that we thought they'd be. You know, I said 3-7. Liz said 4-6. So, obviously, this team outperformed in its last 10 games. It is only 10 games. And then they, of course, have the abrupt 4-day stop where they don't, you know, any momentum is dissipated whatsoever. However, am I nuts to suggest that We've kind of seen a different team. Like, it's not totally different. Like,
the bad defense is still there.
The bad bullpen is still there. But the offense scored a lot more than one time in a row. And they managed to take two games out of three from the Padres, who are a great team in the NL West. They managed to take two games out of three from the Red Sox, who are leading the AL East. And they managed to win three games out of four, which, you know, winning a four-game series against anybody is for some reason very hard to do in baseball. And it was the Cubs, and they're not doing great. But the Phillies still won those games. They won three out of four. They are 7-3. I'm just saying, does it feel like we've seen a different team kind of emerge in these 10 games? Or is it just the same team, but they're, you know, they're getting some of the breaks they didn't get before those 10 games? Chris, let's start with you.
I feel like...
All right, Liz, let's go. Let's start
No. Sorry. Because I don't... I'm struggling with the word coincidence. Like, is it a coincidence that... You know, the offense gets healthy and now they start to score a bunch of runs and we win. And is it a coincidence that all of a sudden it's like Ranger Suarez? Hey, let's make him the closer, even if it's for a couple innings, that now they're starting to play good. Is it all just a coincidence? And am I going to buy into it and be sad? Maybe. But possibly. Probably.
Well, every version of being a fan of this team is buying into what success is available. And then in the past 10 years, the result has been being disappointed that they weren't that team that they presented themselves to be. So, I mean, that's essentially what I'm asking here. Like you were trying to say, but I was shouting over you. This team has a very one of the most easy schedules in the second half. Do those two things, this team having some momentum going into the All-Star break and having an easy schedule in the second half, do you feel any better about this team? This team that we've been pretty much down on the entirety of the first half?
I do. I do feel better about the Phillies right now, currently. It amazes me that like you have bench players like Brad Miller, Ronald Torres, and Travis Jankowski. He's also doing really well. When you have three just role players like that to complement what you already should have going on with your regular lineup, that's something that happens in good teams. So, offensively, yes, the bullpen is still the bullpen, which sucks, and starting pitching is. I mean, it just got worse, and we'll get into that later, I'm sure, but I don't know. I am still heavily invested. Again, I'm going with the it's a whole new ball game mentality. We're starting the second half, technically, at 500, so let's see what they do. I'm willing to watch.
Liz, how much does being at full strength help this team? Didi Gregorius came back on July 2nd after not playing in a Major League Baseball game since May 12th. He's hitting about like 240 in that span, which is very Didi. However, he does have three home runs, and prior to that, from April 1st until May 12th, I believe he had hit four home runs. So, you know, you could make the argument that he's been spanking the ball a little harder in this small stretch before the All-Star break since he's returned. But, however, he has been one of the main contributors to the Phillies' poor defense, along with Alec Boehm. Does this team feel better because it's at full strength? Do you feel like they're getting some of the breaks they didn't get before now? Do you feel like this is a different team in these last 10 games? Do you have hope for the second half? Answers to one of these questions.
Being at full strength has definitely helped. The absence of Gene Segura, especially, was a big deal because he was powering this offense before and has powered it in a lot of ways since coming back. I think he's sort of the main difference maker. It also helps that, my God, I'm looking at his picture on Baseball Reference right now, and he's got this ridiculous, goofy smile. It's haunting me. He's really been the driver of all of this, but it's also helped that, you know, the role players have gotten better and done what we all hoped that they would. You know, everyone is sort of inching their way upwards a little bit towards the level of the team that we all thought they would be, but they also clearly want to be. You know, seeing Rhys Hoskins crossing home plate, clapping and yelling fuck yeah is how we all want this team to be all the time.
Please, please, That is, yes, that you were saying that, oh, they seem like they want to win. That alone is an improvement.
Yes, they're excited, they're engaged. I mean, I think the hat has made a big difference, if I'm being honest.
They didn't have the hat with them today, so they put a bubble yum bucket on the head of whoever hit a home run. Like that's
exactly what we're looking for.
The energy!
Yes, that's what has been missing. That's what was missing from this team for pretty much the entirety of June. I mean, they did crappy in May. They were 12-16 in May, and they were 500 in June. But in June, they were playing like dead team walking. Like, it's been 11 days of June, of July, as of now. They're 7-3, and they're really feeling it. It's disappointing that the All-Star break is going to get in the way. But you hope that going home and resting up for most of these guys for a couple of days, spending time with their families, is going to help them get their heads even better, you know, to get back into the second half and play this week schedule.
How much credit do you want to give Joe Girardi for moving Gene Segura to the leadoff spot? I mean, Gene Segura hasn't hit under 300 in any spot in the batting order this season.
Why did it take him so fucking long?
That's kind of my question, honestly.
I mean, I know he was out for a while, yeah. But I mean, McCutcheon was not good in the leadoff spot. Herrera was not good in the leadoff spot. Gene Segura was the best for every moment he's been on this team this year, has been the best hitter on it, pretty much. The fact that he wouldn't move him to the leadoff spot so Bryce Harper would have someone on base when he hit a home run was endlessly infuriating. I'm glad he's doing it now, and if he gets credit, fine, but I hope he knows in his heart he should have done it so much sooner.
Do the Phillies have what is defined in modern baseball as a leadoff hitter on their roster? I remain not confused, but just unaware of what exactly a leadoff hitter's definition is.
If we do, Segura is the closest to it.
He is, right?
Regardless. Okay. Yeah.
Because like I get McCutcheon, you know, was an elite leadoff hitter at one point in his career, so the natural idea of putting him up there, that makes total sense, but after seeing, okay, this is not the same Andrew McCutcheon, which obviously everyone knows, this isn't going to work out. Herrera was, at one point, he was in a stretch where he was looking like he was productive up there, but then quickly was not anymore. And Segura has been the most productive hitter, I feel like, in the Phillies' batting order this season.
Well, and now, he has the highest on-base percentage of his career, like, if the season were to end today.
Right.
So he's seeing the most pitches also,
yeah,
which is, you know, something a leadoff hitter does.
He's not an elite base stealer, but he can steal bases. He can get that extra base. And him coming up without an out already, you know, accounted for is like a bonus. So, yeah, I feel like that's a productive move, without a doubt. If that's Girardi, got to give him credit, you know, as much as we come down on him. That's like, but at the same time, Liz, you're right. How long were we going to wait before a move like that got made? So that's kind of, but I did notice, you know, that is something that's started to happen, and it's been very productive for the Phillies as well. So hopefully that's something that continues into the second half. So shifting the lineup around has been helpful. That's been a, you know, I assume a Girardi move that has not been bad. You know, Chris, Liz and I talked on our last episode of Continued Success of like, what were three things we liked about the first half? What were three things we didn't? I'm not going to put you on the spot, but can you just name, like, you know, your chief takeaway and a positive takeaway about the Phillies from the first half, and your chief negative takeaway from the Phillies in the first half? Like, what's their biggest problem? What's their biggest good thing?
Biggest problem is the bullpen. I don't really need to explain that.
How did you feel when Brandon Kinsler? You know what? We're going to talk about that in a second and all the things attached to that. So go ahead and finish your thought. Sorry.
Yeah. The negative is the bullpen. The positive is just Zach Wheeler. That's it. Just Zach Wheeler. Everything else has been, it's been okay. Like, you know, Harper was injured for a while, but when he's been playing, he's been really fucking good. Like, really, really, really good, and people just don't really pay attention. Also, Gene Segura, obviously, he missed, like, what, it was like 2.5 weeks. I feel like injuries are downplaying some really good performances by players on the Phillies, other than Zach Wheeler. He has been, quite frankly, insane. It's been awesome. Nola's been a little disappointing, but, you know, he had those 10 strikeouts in a row, and it just, it was almost like a reminder, like, hey, I'm not having the greatest season, but check this out.
You know, there was an illuminating article in The Athletic of Matt Gelb and the Red Sox beat writer were going back and forth just about these two teams that had, you know, their last series of the first half before the All-Star break, and how easily they could have swapped positions in their respective divisions if other decisions had been made. And it just pointed out that, like, the Phillies' acquisition of star players has actually been very good. You know, I mean, you know, granted, if a player is a star and you acquire them, chances are it's going to look good because they are a star for a reason. However, you know, the Phillies have Bryce Harper, they have JT Realmuto, they have Zach Wheeler, they have Gene Segura, and, like, these guys, these tent poles for your roster have actually been, you know, for as frustrating a team the Phillies have been, they've gotten a lot of production out of the guys they're supposed to get production from. Their problem is
everyone else.
The guys Pat Gillick would have signed, you know, the Joe Blantons, the Matt Stairs, you know, the role players you don't think about who step up in a big moment and come through. And the Phillies just have not had that depth. That's part of their depth problem. Meanwhile, the Red Sox focused on that in the offseason and signed a bunch of guys, and it has worked out for them for the most part, that a lot of their role players, a lot of their low-key guys that they went out and got have come through for them. And the Phillies just haven't, you know, you can call that luck, but I don't, you can also just kind of blame front office. Like, they aren't, you assume that they're not picking guys for no reason, that they're not just like, oh, okay, this guy instead of this guy, who cares why? I rolled some dice, I flipped a coin, who cares? The Phillies just have not, you know, part of it is luck, but part of it is they have not picked the right guys. So, you know, imagining this team being better than they are, imagining this team being a 50-win team going into the break, I mean, how much do you afford this team that it's just bad luck, and how much do you think it's bad evaluation that they have the stars they need to win, but they don't have the role players they need to win?
Evaluation is at the center of a lot of the Phillies' problems throughout the entire organization. It doesn't take a genius to say, hey, JT Realmuto is good, we should sign him. But
interesting.
Yeah, I know, right? It takes more to be like, all right, we need this, we need role players, and this guy is perfect. Like, I don't know what it is. I'm not a professional baseball person, so I can't give anyone any advice. But evaluation is definitely part of the problem, because if they're always choosing the wrong guys, yeah, some of that might be luck, but some of it is also them. If they never hit on a guy, that's them.
Well, what's interesting there is that they've gone through a couple of regime changes.
Yeah.
And they still are picking, like, the wrong guys somehow. So, I mean, granted, look at the bench now. Brad Miller had 3 home runs in 1 game. He was not doing well leading up to that point, but he did have that 3 home run game, and that'll stand out. Ronald Torres has probably been
the best
player on the Phillies. I don't know. Like, he's definitely been a key contributor on offense. Like, as far as guys you want coming up with runners in scoring position, it's, you know, there's guys maybe ahead of him. Gene Segura is ahead of him, but, like, he's near the top. Luke Williams has looked, you know, adequate, at least, you know, a fun story. And he's, you know, he dove and made a catch. So often have we watched Phillies players dive and the ball just rolls out behind them. Your eyes just kind of naturally shift to that space in the grass behind the Phillies outfielder who has just dove. And you just assume that's where the ball is going to be. And he made a diving catch the other day. And I was like, wow, that's what that feels like. That's so cool. And Nick Maton has been pretty solid when he was up with the Phillies this year. Obviously, both those guys are younger. They're prospects who weren't necessarily considered very high prospects, but they were able to contribute in some meaningful way, no matter how, you know, if you consider that serious contribution, if you consider it like a long-term thing, that's TBD, but they were able to contribute something this year. So there are some quote-unquote success stories as far as the Phillies' depth goes, but it's undeniable that that is what the Phillies are missing, especially with a manager like Joe Girardi, who likes to make changes, who likes to manage, who likes to shift and make double switches and pinch hit and be, you know, use trickery. And the Phillies just seem like they don't have the toolbox that a manager like that wants. And honestly, They weren't like that when Gabe Kapler was here and he was trying to do the same thing. So they just have to, if they want to have a manager who does this, who operates in this kind of way, it can work. They just aren't giving them the tools they need to succeed. I think there is an argument to be made there, as angry and infuriating as Girardi is this year, like in making the in-game decisions that he's made.
I agree. I mean, I don't know if I've ever thought about it, or at least not recently thought about it in that way. Though I will say that at the same time, while the Phillies haven't given Girardi the best tools in his toolbox, if he doesn't have a hammer, he shouldn't try and use one.
Right.
You know,
and he doesn't bother to explain himself.
Exactly.
Didn't the Phillies know what manager they were hiring?
No. I'm going to guess so. No. I mean, I don't think he'd ever managed an NL team.
Well, no, the Marlins.
The Marlins for 1 year.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean,
cup of coffee.
That's like my big complaint with Girardi, is that he doesn't seem able to adjust his managing to the team he actually has. He's using them like he'd use, you know, the 09 Yankees, which had a deep toolbox to use.
Yeah.
But the Phillies are not that. And you have to adjust your managing to the reality of your situation. And I feel like Joe Girardi has a tough time doing it.
Wasn't his reputation, he was very set in his ways in these things?
Uh-huh.
Like, how can you not evaluate that your roster doesn't, you know, like, it's not something that's going to play for what Girardi does? It's like, it's just bad all around. Girardi needs to adapt. He's not going to, like he basically made pretty clear to the Yankees and why he probably lost his job, other than apparently young people hated him. Shocking. I don't understand it at all. Any of it. None of it makes sense. They're like, yeah, Joe Girardi, that guy, set in his ways. Yeah, our roster totally doesn't play in his favor. But you know what? Joe knows how to win because he beat us. I remember that. So yeah. Let's hire him.
I mean, that's the thing. People argue, like, how much impact does a manager really have on a game? And I think that's a fine argument to have because some managers don't impact the game. I think a lot of what a manager's job is just kind of studying the current like it's a river and trying to guide it in whatever small ways you can. But, you know, like with a river, you know, erosion takes time, you know, shifting direction takes time. And you're just going to guide this force that's outside of your control however you can to go in the direction you actually want it to go in. And that's a tough job. But the difference is somebody like a Kapler, somebody like a Girardi is trying very hard to control the direction of that risk. So if they're going to put in that effort, you got to give them the oars, you got to give them the rocks, you got to give them the dams they need to control the flow of that river. And the Phillies, since Kapler was here, have not had the deep toolbox they need to acquiesce to a manager like that. So you can point to the hiring of a manager who wants to manage in game aggressively and say, hey, maybe somebody else would have been better for this job. Maybe somebody else would have been better for this roster. Yeah, and that disregards all of the, you know, hey, a manager impacts a game so much. So let's get a manager who doesn't impact the game so much and see how that goes, because this team clearly has not been outfitted for the kind of managers they've been hiring. I didn't really intend to have this conversation, but we're having it. Yeah. So
one thing I'll say is that we can hope that this offseason, as we always do, will make a difference, because this will be the first one where, when was Dave Dombrowski hired?
Beginning of, before this season.
Yeah, well, I know, like, when exactly?
Oh, I don't know.
Was it January?
It was late. It was late.
Yeah.
It was late.
It was
late. Wasn't it? Yeah.
That's it. He had almost nothing to do, I think, with the construction of this roster.
Oh, yeah, this is not his team. And he was, the announcement of his hiring was in, like, mid-December 2020.
Yes. So he didn't have a ton to do with putting this team together. He signed JT, but he didn't hire Girardi. There was probably no collaboration or limited collaboration between the two of them as far as the direction they needed to go, what Joe feels he needs in games. And that, as it turns out, is a problem. So I hope that this offseason there will be collaboration and Dombrowski will do things and make his presence known and stop, you know, when his gap year is over, actually do something.
How much, Chris, how much do you think this is a gap year? I thought that more and more as the weeks have gone by that, like, yeah, this they didn't come outward and say it, but I feel like the undercurrent was out there that this is basically a gap year, and the Phillies are willing to not win this year in an effort to just get Dave Dombrowski to get a survey of the landscape and figure out what he's going to do moving forward to make this team better.
If that's the case, I think that's fucking stupid. Like, I think that would be dumb. Like, why would it?
It's an odd time to be still surveying.
God, like, oh, let's spend a year in purgatory and see how it goes, because next year's free agents class is so good. Where have I heard that before?
It's
like, God, fuck off.
It's an excuse not to spend money. That's what it was at the beginning. It was an excuse not to spend money, and now, at the All-Star break before the trade deadline, it's going to be an excuse not to go out and get a big piece. Now, to be fair, the Phillies need, I think, more than just one or two pieces, big or small, to really get themselves to the level that they want to be, if they're not getting there themselves. But I've lost my train of thought.
What do you think the Phillies actually have to do at the deadline, and I'm not sure they can do it, is actually trade for Chris Bryant and Craig Kimbrell.
No.
And then hope for the best.
They're not, that's what I was gonna say. They're not doing it because they don't want to spend money. They don't want to spend prospects. The Dave Dombrowski is surveying the landscape was an excuse to do what had been threatened the entire time, which was move back, step back a year and not do anything. I think they hoped that signing JT Realmuto would distract everyone, because while that was a move for this year, it's also a move for several years in a row. So they can do that and be like, no, of course we're not taking a year off. We're not taking a break. Look, we signed this big player.
It's also a move that everyone had expected them to make, to the point that they thought it was a given.
Yeah.
And then the narrative kind of twisted to it's not a given, and then it wasn't a given, and then they re-signed him,
and then
JT Realmuto was like, oh yeah, this was never not going to happen.
And then the Phillies' Twitter account took the sloppiest victory lap I've ever seen, ever.
Ugh.
By anything. Just the whole hashtag signed JT thing. Like, rubbing it in our faces. Like, congrats on the bare minimum.
Great job, guys.
Congrats, guys. You did it.
Goes even further into my conspiracy theory that they were always going to re-sign JT. They just upped the drama so that it was a bigger deal when they did sign him.
Well, they upped the drama so everyone would be like, oh, look, they're not taking a year off. They are spending money, but they're not. They're not really doing that. They're not spending money. They're not spending prospects. And I don't think they're going to do anything big at the deadline, because this is still a gap year where John Middleton is still making back his yacht money.
Yeah, that's still where I'm kind of at, because, yeah, it's and honestly, even if you have a planned gap year, it's still bullshit. This is, what, year three of having Bryce Harper here? Like, yes, he's here for an eternity, but he's only going to be in his prime for so long. And then when you shift that same argument to JT Realmuto, this dude's a catcher. You don't know how much longer you have somebody playing at an elite level when they play the hardest position, most injury-prone position in baseball. It's awesome that JT is starting in the All-Star game. I love when that happens.
Yeah.
It sucks that Buster Posey just isn't able to do it, and that's why JT Realmuto is starting. But it's still great to have a starting catcher in the All-Star game. I mean, JT is a tremendous catcher, and it's awesome that he's on the Phillies. So for that reason, to just say, we're going to take a year and just kind of look around and see what's the deal is. You're wasting a year in not only Bryce Harper's career, you're wasting a year of JT Realmuto's career.
And all of our time.
And Wheeler and Nola.
Anybody who you consider worth a damn on this roster. This is basically a waste, because you're just like, well, maybe they'll be good. And if they're not, well, we'll wait till next year. And like that's a huge bummer, and it is a waste of time. All right, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk about the just utter shithattery that was the prelude to the Phillies game this afternoon. And we'll be right back after this. Just to get it out of the way, and we're back here on Continued Success, I want to ask you guys, and I'll start with Liz, Just to get it on the record, what do we think the Phillies are going to do at the trade deadline? Is it nothing? Is it something small? I don't think any of us think it's something big. So, like, what do you literally, specifically think the Phillies are going to do at the trade deadline?
I think they'll pick up a reliever again, because the bullpen is always a problem, and there's always an issue, and they always need extra arms. Whether they stick them in AAA or they keep them in the majors, they're definitely going to get an arm.
this team above all others needs extra arms, given that Joe Girardi has, you know, oh, my bullpen has 10 guys in it, but four are available on any given night, given the rest schedule I've implemented. Chris, trade deadline, your thoughts?
Okay, I agree with Liz. It's going to be some type of reliever. You would hope for like a Kimbrel type, but that's probably not going to happen. Although they did give away Yu Darvish, so who knows. But definitely a reliever, and I don't know if it counts as trade deadline, but Cole Hamels has a showcase coming up.
He does. And,
yes, and I really think the Phillies are going to just do it.
Are you guys ready to stomach? I'm going to say it. Are you guys ready to stomach a bad Cole Hamels for 4 or 5 games?
Yeah.
I'll take it over a bad Vince Velasquez anymore. I'm done.
Come home, Cole.
It's worth a shot. Like, let's just do it. So a reliever, you add to the, you know, to the rotation, and then finally, if you know, if Cole Hamels gets shelled for 5 games, you know, tip of the cap. See you later, Cole.
Welcome
and then
to the bullpen.
Finally,
how much worse could it be?
Yeah, and then maybe finally they'll be like, hey, Bailey Falter, why don't you take a spot? Or, hey, Ranger Suarez, oh, wait, never mind, you're our closer now. Sorry.
Which I'm not angry at. Who's angry at that?
No, I'm not either, but he'd probably be a good starter.
After today,
who knows,
but it has to be said, since you brought it up, Ranger Suarez today having to get 7 outs, I had no, it wasn't even like a specifically Ranger Suarez thing. It was just like a reliever having to get 7 outs.
I had no confidence.
I really didn't think it was happening.
This game against that lineup, I just assumed, oh, this won't happen. Suarez, there were at least 2 pitches that were perfectly placed.
Yep.
And there, I think the third called strike on the first 2 hitters of the bottom of the ninth, or the bottom of the ninth inning. Placed them perfectly. The first one was probably a ball. The second one was definitely a strike, but both of them were called as strikes. And he just you just gotta say it. Like going into the break like that. That Hector Neris had struggled for a few games, and we entered our negative Hector Neris portion of the season. That Girardi made a change, and Suarez has been serving this role. Like, that's a significant change. And then having him come in and get 7 outs in a game that was unfortunately a bullpen game from the beginning. I mean, that was an unlikely win, and it was a great win for this team. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how things got that way. We're going into today.
Womp womp.
The Phillies have a matinee, the third game of a series that it turns out, hey, it's going to determine who wins the series going into the All-Star break. The Phillies, if they won today, which obviously we know they did, we're going to be 500 going into the break, which is, you know, a big deal. And that was, you know, facing Aaron Nola versus Nick Pivetta. There is a narrative in play that, like, oh, this constantly debated Phillies starter who was going to be great and then wasn't great and then always hit his stride, but no, he hasn't. There's been a bunch of different Phillies young pitchers who have come up through the farm system or through trades who were intended to be big parts of the rotation, and it just hasn't worked out. A lot of guys, and Pivetta was one of them. I know some people wanted to hold on to him, and some people were ready to be over him, and he was obviously traded to the Red Sox in 2020 in exchange for blah, 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 and toilet noise. But the point is, he's on the Red Sox now, and he famously a couple of, like 2 weeks ago, was on a broadcast and said, hey, the main difference between the Phillies and Red Sox is that the Red Sox know how to win. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Hey, fair enough.
Really, hard to argue.
Yeah, but
did he have to say that?
I mean, he said it.
He did.
So, hey, tough to say he's
wrong.
I
hope he backed it up with a good start against the Phillies today.
The thing about that is, so going into this start, that was the main narrative. But as we all know, Aaron Nola was scratched from today's start. And I'll just read directly from this ESPN story. The Philadelphia Phillies scratched right-hander Aaron Nola from his scheduled start scheduled start Sunday against the Boston Red Sox after he was placed on the COVID-related injured list. Nola was one of 4 players placed on the virus-related injured list by the Phillies on Sunday. Third baseman Alec Bohm, right-hander Connor Brogdon, and left-hander Bailey Falter were also placed on the list. Bohm had exited Saturday's game due to COVID-19 protocols and has tested positive for the virus, manager Joe Girardi said Sunday. By rule, Bohm will have to miss at least 10 days after the positive result. Girardi told reporters that Bohm was asymptomatic as of Saturday night. Bohm also hit a home run before he was removed from that game. That's just me jumping in. And then to finish my ESPN quoting, Nola, Brogdon, and Falter were placed on the list as close contacts. So, What we're dealing with here is, and what this story hadn't said, was that the Phillies were one of...
seven.
Do you guys know? Seven teams in Major League Baseball to not hit the 85% threshold to have, like, all things accessible to you as far as vaccinations go. So 85% of the team was not vaccinated. And do we know what percentage of them... Of the team was vaccinated, like how far short they were? I don't think that information is public.
No,
is
it's not? I don't believe so.
No.
Right. So, but it is shameful enough that this is one of the teams. Like, this was funny to me because going into this game, it was just like, all right, this team has hit a stride of sorts. This looks kind of good. What tomfoolery will unfold today in the game that makes this, you know, this hot stretch going into the All-Star break seem dumb? And this is before the game started, so that they won the game is a big deal, and I love it. But that this news greeted us before the game was just like, ah, I had forgotten to consider this component,
yep.
Which is that there'd be enough stupid people on this roster to not get vaccinated. And whoops-a-daisy, the starting third baseman, who is just starting to like heat up and hit the ball, is now testing positive for COVID. And that one of their top two starters, who again has been struggling, but is still one of their top two starters, unless you guys want to argue that, Aaron Nola also got scratched from this start. I mean, my general opinion here isn't complicated. Get the fucking vaccine. Get the vaccine. Just get it. Getting it is good. Not getting it is stupid. Get the fucking vaccine, guys. It's a vaccine. You've already had vaccines in your life. What are we afraid of? Fucking do it. Get the vaccine. It's science. Get the vaccine. I know I'm not going to convince anybody who's like, well, I'm not getting it because 5G. I know I'm not going to convince you, but I'm just saying, get it.
Yeah.
I have nothing to add there. I agree with everything you just said. I just fucking get it.
What was your general reaction to this?
I posted a video the other day. It's at a hardcore punk rock show where it's a bunch of people in the very early stages of things opening up, just being at a show, and they are screaming at people to get the vaccine. And then somebody just bursts in and yells about Disney World laying them off, and then they say, fuck Magic Mountain. It's a very good video if you haven't seen it. It's excellent. But at the same time, you have these hardcore punk rock people. I mean, the lady I was talking about was yelling with just makeup just smeared on her eyes. She looked like she's going to war. She has the vaccine. She doesn't give a shit. And all of a sudden, somebody comes out of right field and goes, you do heroin. You do heroin, and you don't get the vaccine because you don't know what's in it. What's up with that?
This is before we even say that Didi Gregorius has been wearing a mask. Well, was wearing a mask previously during COVID while the teams were playing. Because of a kidney issue that makes him more susceptible to COVID, which means there's guys on this Phillies roster
who don't give a shit. Personal decision, blah, blah. Like,
it's guys, it's not a personal, Liz, I'm sorry, I'm going to let you talk here in a second. I just want to say one thing. It's not a personal decision
Mm-mm.
when it affects other people. So you can stop Perfect. Making that argument if you're still making it, because
yeah.
It's not a personal decision. You're infecting other people potentially.
This is their job. Like, playing baseball is their job. These guys are the best in the world at it. They constantly work on it. They give up time with their families, their friends. They miss big life events, and yet they won't get the fucking vaccine to make sure their team never has a unnecessary competitive disadvantage or to make sure their immunocompromised teammate is safe all the time, no matter what. The All-Star break lasts through Thursday. That's the perfect time to get the fucking vaccine and deal with the side effects. Get it. Just get the vaccine and shut the fuck up.
That's a good point, though.
Whew,
Liz.
Sorry.
That is a good point. But also, like, you know, it's part of, like, your job is to be out there and help a team win. And if you're going to put them at a competitive disadvantage, it's complete bullshit.
I love this side of the debate. I love it. Because this is a huge competitive disadvantage during a season where Joe Girardi has repeatedly used the phrase competitive advantage as far as the things he does, the things he thinks, the strategies the team uses, the players who are in the game at a specific time, the stuff that he will not explain anymore for reasons. Those are all competitive advantages. But there's one competitive advantage that the Phillies don't want, which is getting the vaccine. This puts them at a competitive disadvantage because A, their starting third baseman is no longer available. B, One of their top two starting pitchers wasn't available today. This is the definition of a competitive disadvantage when it's something so simple and everyone is just not doing it. Oh, well, for a team that focuses so much on competitive advantages, for a team who's you know, minority of supporters in the realm of, like, Girardi and stuff, who are like, oh, maybe Joe Girardi does know what he's doing after all, Liz. Yeah. He started Brad Miller and he hit 3 home runs. Yeah, well, I guess his team doesn't, because when they had the chance to have an obvious competitive advantage, they were just like, nah, I read some shit.
I have some breaking news that's really unfortunate. Gelb just released a piece on the whole COVID thing.
Oh no!
So I'm gonna read this part for you guys.
I've been spending some time looking up what the close contact rule is for those who are vaccinated to figure out if the players on the COVID IL who are considered close contacts, if they were vaccinated or not. And I feel like, Chris, you're about to tell me.
You're about to, oh God, this is breaking my heart. Anyway, when Kinsler experienced neck pain, he attributed it to a Johnson & Johnson vaccine he received in the first week of the season.
What?
His body, he said, shut down, and that forced him to compensate during an outing. Here's where it gets bad. Didi Gregorius has told teammates he thought the vaccine led to his pseudo gout diagnosis. When asked last month if he had a theory about what caused his elbow issues, Gregorius said, I have no clue, so I'm not sure. Let's go with that, because if I start saying things, it's going to turn into a whole thing.
No.
Archie Bradley alluded to the vaccine when he injured his oblique in April. It's been a talking point inside the clubhouse, although the club's medical staff has attempted to dispel those theories. Quote, I think everyone should recover for a week from that thing, Kinsler said of the vaccine last month. Archie Bradley strained his oblique after it. Matt Joyce had back problems. There has to be some science behind it. Unquote.
Oh, no. Oh, no. They're all stupid.
No.
Oh, jeez. I mean, to be fair, needing a week to recover from the vaccination does make sense. You do, you know, there is some recovery time entailed, but I'm being very generous here. This sucks.
Yeah. Oh, and just to add a little insult to injury here, those who have been vaccinated, according to policies that released at the end of March, those who have been vaccinated, even if they are not on a, even if they're not on a team who that's reached 85%, I think these apply to fully vaccinated tier one individuals or full teams where 85% of those tier one individuals are fully vaccinated. They will not have to quarantine if they have been in close contact with someone who is diagnosed with COVID-19 as long as they're asymptomatic. So everyone who is on the COVID IL right now has not been vaccinated.
Who wants to go first?
I'm just saying, listeners, you're hearing us react to all this in real time.
Yeah. according to Gelb, the team is hoping for herd immunity to prevent future positives.
That's not how this works.
Because there are quote-unquote vocal leaders in the clubhouse that have been keeping the vaccination rates down. Oh, man.
Well,
maybe they did.
I thought Reese was the vocal leader. That's not true. I don't know. You know what?
I would have to stop liking this team for a while if I found out that Rhys Hoskins didn't have the vaccine.
No, he absolutely
And if he was saying this bullshit.
But yeah, like that would
We don't know who it is, but yes, we can make educated guesses, but we don't know who it is. And the fact that this dynamic is present at all is stupid bullshit.
It's fucking insane. This is
We need someone inside to tell us who it is. We need someone either after the season or whenever to tell us who it is, because it's going to kill me to see some of these players be beloved by Phillies fans when they're spouting this QAnon adjacent bullshit. That's exactly what this is. These guys, these adult men, are all acting at the same time like they're scared children. Petulant adolescents and QAnon supporters.
Guys, it's a fucking vaccination.
People have gotten it for generations now.
I mean, and as Gelb said 20 minutes ago when he tweeted this story out, the Phillies had a nice win to reach 500 at the break. They have talked about how resilient a group it is, but it's a little less credible when the adversity is self-inflicted.
God bless you, Gelb. That's
Gelb has been artful. On fucking point this season.
I want to send him
his article after Reese's whole, you know, write about the good things. Let's write about the good things now, Reese. Let's write about him now.
Let's be easy on Reese. I feel bad for him because he has to share a clubhouse with these ding dongs.
This is just.
But we don't know. We don't know who is saying what.
Do we?
We don't.
I know we don't.
We don't know. We can guess, but we don't know. And
we know that one of them is probably Didi Gregorius, who believes his pseudo gout was caused by the vaccine.
I can't. That's the part that's sticking with me. Like, Didi was the one in a mask all the time. And like, how is he going to be one of the people to be like, don't get the vaccine?
Well, and that's what's baffling about this is that Kinsler, Bradley and Gregorius all seemingly have the vaccine. They've been vaccinated at least once. And who knows if it's twice, but at least once. And they seem to be saying, don't get it. Which.
It's even worse than the people that haven't gotten it and say, don't get
like,
it.
This is.
Because these are people with it and they're being like, hey, we got it and it sucked. Like, fuck.
Let's not hesitate to again quote from the Athletic story Joe Girardi, who said, "I don't think you can demand that players do it. I think it's a personal choice.
Fuck you.
And you have to deal with it. That's all."
I mean, here's the thing: every manager and coach has to say that. I've been following the Buffalo Bills pretty closely. They were one of the stadiums that said they weren't going to allow in anybody who wasn't vaccinated. And the GM and the coach both said at different times they believe that being vaccinated is a competitive advantage. They have no idea why anybody wouldn't get it. And I think the GM said that he would want to cut guys who were not vaccinated or who wouldn't get it. And of course, Cole Beasley, player on the Bills, shut off his mouth about. Mm-hmm. Utter ridiculousness.
I live my life a quarter mile at a time. I'm not going to get the vaccine because I don't have a broken leg or some stupid bullshit. Like,
it's in God's hands.
They want to phrase it like it's some kind of rock and roll lifestyle to not do a simple, free thing to prevent yourself from getting a deadly pandemic virus that you can easily spread to other people for whom it might be more deadly than it is to you.
But, I mean,
what is complicated about this? what is difficult about this situation?
We have a Ronald Torreyes quote in this Matt Gelb story where he says Nola wanted to pitch and Alec wanted to play. They are competitors. They always want to help out the team. If that was fucking true, they'd get the fucking vaccine.
To complete the circle on what I was talking about, after all of that Cole Beasley stuff, both the GM and the coach have been like, well, we can't force anyone to get it, and it's a personal decision. It's just the press speak that they have to do when you know for a fact that most of these guys think that anyone who doesn't get it is an idiot. But because it's a clubhouse and everyone has to be welcome and everyone has to have each other's backs, we all have to support the people who don't get it and act like it's a totally fine decision to make instead of one that is risky to everyone, including those who've been vaccinated. Because when a virus passes through you, it doesn't come out the same when you pass it to someone else. Viruses mutate as they pass through people.
As we know with the variants that are on their way.
So if you are not vaccinated and you get it, whether you're symptomatic or not, you are putting out a virus that has been adjusted, that those who have been vaccinated may not be as vaccinated against, because that's how vaccines work. Cole Beasley said, I'm going to drink a lot of water and use the natural stuff that I do, vitamins, to protect me, you know, from coronavirus, my natural immunity. Like, that's something that works. I don't know why people believe that their random thoughts and bullshit they see on Facebook qualifies as medical evidence. And when they look at medical evidence, they think it's bullshit or they think it's a conspiracy theory implanted by the government.
Well,
it's the world we live in. It's,
do you guys want to talk about the All-Star game or something?
I mean, I want to shove like, my head in a vat of cold water.
I gotta tell you, I don't have a lot of respect for this Phillies.
No,
team. Like, and that's regardless of what they do on the field. Like, here we were sitting here, like, okay, let's put some stuff aside and talk about what a cool 10 games this was and how much better they looked against these teams. But guess what? A lot, yeah, some stuff is just more important than what happens on the field that everyone wants to make. Everyone wants to be like the dystopian hero from the YA novel who doesn't take the shot and is the only one not under the mind control of the government. And I'm just tired of it. Like, guys, this is stupid. And as it's been framed here, this is adversity of your own making. And that doesn't give you any sympathy from me. So
maybe they didn't deserve to win today's game.
Woof. Well, let's close up shop here and say, what do you guys, I don't know, you gonna watch the All-Star game? Like, what's up?
I never did.
I'm going to watch.
I'll be honest, I never
I'm going to watch the Home Run Derby. I will definitely watch the Home Run Derby, no question.
Oh, you mean the one where Reese Hossins should be in it and not Trevor Story? Yeah, I agree.
Cram it, Chris. That we talked about this on Continued Success. I think that's I like ridiculous. To,
Justin yelled at me too. I get it, but
I like to foster debate. But I have one debate with Chris, and then I have one debate with Liz, and you guys don't communicate with each other. And yeah, it just makes me into the puppet master. Now you're here together.
Oh, God.
But yeah, I mean, I think Chris is right that if there was one spot for Reese to take, it would obviously be Trevor Story's. However, I still maintain give the home team somebody to root for makes total sense. Why? I'm with Chris. I'm with you. We're Phillies fans. I'd rather see a Phillies player in Thank the home you. Run derby. But Thank I'm just you. Saying it makes more sense given that the game is not taking Again. Place in Philadelphia.
2026, they better put Harper out there in a wheelchair.
Oh, there better be four Phillies on the home run derby team.
For they better bring Ryan Howard out of retirement.
And then I'll be on your guys' side. But until then, fuck that decision.
Maybe Trevor Story is the Philly shortstop.
Didi Gregorius has fallen again with a case of pseudo-gout.
Oh, who knows where it came from. Well,
again, pseudo-gout is stolen valor. I have real gout. It's real. It's real. There's nothing sweet about it. All right, sorry.
This sucks, guys. All right. Any final thoughts going into the All-Star break, Liz?
Yes, I have a final thought. On this road trip, or at least it's the beginning of July, the Phillies have faced Jake Arrieta, Adam Morgan, Brandon Workman, and Nick Pivetta. Suck it, all of them.
Yay!
Suck it, suck it.
I thought they would beat Arrieta. I did not think they would beat Nick Pivetta.
No.
I thought that narratively made too much sense for him to throw seven no-hit innings against them. But hey, results are results.
And they got three runs off of Workman, so again.
Chris, final thoughts?
I guess like a loud fart noise followed by that toilet flushing noise you mentioned earlier.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good one. And I'll go with three toilet flushing noises and then maybe like the sound of some birds, you know, a flock of birds taking off from a tree. Just alarmed by the sound of the toilet flushing so aggressively.
You know what? That's actually really good because everything is pretty shitty, but there's some good things like chirping birds flying away. But mostly it's just the shit.
God damn it, guys! Get the vaccine.
Oh my God.
All right, well, that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. Don't forget to subscribe to all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hidden Season with John Stolness, The Dirty Inning with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk, and head on over to the Patreon at patreon.com/hiddenseason for access to Absolutely Hammered with me and Chris Jones, as well as movie reviews from me and Liz Rocher. Heading into the second half, we'll have a whole bunch of content for you as well as the Phillies continue to through the whole it's going to be a great time. We're going to have a great time. We're going to have fun watching baseball, watching the Phillies. We thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time on Continued Success.